girls. It's October 15th. We are in Cascade Locks at the Cascade City Hall for the October 15, 2002 Joint Interim Committee on Natural Resources Subcommittee on the Columbia River Gorge Commission Review.
I'll be here for the afternoon.
No, it's not chocolate.
You actually get done by dinner.
Welcome to the City of Cascade Locks, to the Joint Interim Committee on Natural Resources Subcommittee on the Columbia River Gorge Commission Review. This is part of a series of hearings that are being held to engage in legislative oversight of the Columbia River Gorge Commission and its administration of the Scenic Area Act. Yesterday we held a hearing in Hood River, took a great deal of testimony, but as the hour grew late and there were some pieces of information that we needed to bring forward, we invited some testimony to come forward today. But before we get into the hearings this afternoon, I'd like to thank the City of Cascade Locks for making this facility available to us. It's very much appreciated. When we take our legislative hearings on the road, it's always nice to be able to come to a community and be warmly received and have facilities like this one be offered to us all. So we thank the City of Cascade Locks. We have a couple of submissions for the record, and in a moment I'll ask that they be acknowledged for the record. But I'd like to introduce our staff again. Ray Kelly is our committee administrator, and he is assisted today by Linda Gatto, who is our committee assistant. I also would like to introduce Mr. Brendan McCarthy, who is legislative counsel for natural resources for the state of Oregon. And Brendan is here to help us gain an understanding of his interpretation of the legislative authority to enter into modifications of the Bi-State Compact. Ray, if you'll acknowledge the submissions that came to us since yesterday for inclusion in the public record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The first thing we have is a memorandum from the Nez Perce tribe. The title is Save Our Heritage, the Beautiful Columbia River Gorge Scenic Area.
That's fine. Just acknowledge it.
And then the other submission for the record is from yesterday, just received it, and it's from Rick Ray of Springdale, Oregon, and it's testimony before the Columbia River Gorge Commission Review Subcommittee. This gentleman says the act is moderate and speaks to his building project.
Okay, I might just make it known for the record that it's customary for the chair to instruct the staff to keep the public record open for 10 days following our public hearing so that if anybody wishes to submit additional written testimony, they would be entered into the record as if they were received during the hearing. And all of those would be available by reference in the public record and available for the public inspection. We have a question. Ray, we're having some acoustic difficulty. Can't hear Ray at all. Okay. Can we make those mics a little hotter?
Yeah, I have to go back there.
Okay, we'll have the technical adjustment. Thank you. Noted for the record. We'll begin with invited testimony, and I'd like to begin this morning with Kim Titus from U.S. Forest Service. Kim, if you could come forward.
That's okay.
And while we're seating our first witness, we will just introduce the panel again to the members of the public. Beginning with Representative Lowe.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Hello there. Welcome.
From, this area, I believe.
From the gorge.
Okay. And
yes.
Senator Metzger.
Also from here.
And myself, Ted Ferrioli, chairman of the committee. The ringing of the telephone reminds me that electronic devices should be turned off. So if you're carrying a cell phone, a beeper, or any other electronic devices, please disable those since they tend to be disruptive. And we're in a gym here, so the acoustics are not as good as they might be. So any background noise will be multiplied. So just to be aware of that. Restrooms and soft drink machines are located through the double doors at the rear of the building, and just feel free to move about the building, but try not to make too much noise. Is the acoustics in the building, are the speakers working a little better? Can everybody hear? Okay, thank you. Ms. Titus, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Kim Titus, acting area manager for the National Scenic Area Forest Service. And with me, I've brought Pam Campbell, who is the lands officer for the same office. I've only been in the position since July, and while I am new to the position, I was previously the district ranger on the Hood River Ranger District on the Mount Hood, and have been a resident of Hood River for 7 years. What I brought today was a couple of pieces of information that was requested by the committee. There is a document which is a summary of the land acquisitions that Representative Smith requested yesterday. It has total acres that have been acquired by county and the dollar values of those acquisitions. I've also brought the file for the Witham case that we discussed at length yesterday evening, and I'll submit that, although I'll hold on to it in case there's any questions you'd like to ask me while I have it with me. And then I asked Pam to come to share with you the status of our 8-0 program. So with that, I think I'll turn the microphone over to Pam, and we'll go over the status of the 8-0 acquisitions.
Thank you.
Okay. I wasn't here yesterday. Not sure what you know and don't know, but...
Pam, could I ask you to just speak your name for the public record?
Sure. Pam Campbell.
And move the mic a little closer, if you might.
Land Staff Officer, Scenic Area. How's that?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. We received about 186 offers, filtered those down to about 77 high priority. We had about 33 on the books already. Some of those 33 were not 8-0s that were subsequently changed to 8-0s, but those are, so we have about 110 that cases that we had to work on total. We worked through the high-low priority. We've got all our high priorities. We've got each case assigned to a fiscal year, 02-03-04. As you know, March of 04 is when all of this, all the lands, the offers under 8-0 go GMA. This last fiscal year, 02, we made a total of 35 offers, worth about $12 million. 18 of those, well, actually 21 were recorded, so 21 transfer title. On July 1st, we had our money transferred over to the fire to support the fire effort, so at that point, we were unable to close cases. So a lot of the cases that we otherwise would have worked on in 02 are now being worked on in 03. And like Kim said, we have 54 cases that we're actively working on. Some are finishing up from 02. We have 8 options signed and pending these 03 appropriation, we can move forward with those. But we hope to make about, again, 35 offers again this fiscal year, or more if possible.
Is there a way that we can get those statistics in sort of a box score format on a one-page handout that we can distribute to the...
Yeah, actually, we've got that. We send a monthly update to the congressional staffers, and I've got that formatted. I just don't have it with me, but okay. I certainly can get it to you.
Well, if you could submit that monthly update to our staff, we'll distribute it to the committee.
Certainly.
And we don't need to get it monthly. Maybe quarterly would be sufficient for our purposes.
Okay. Okay. On a regular basis?
Sure.
That'd be absolutely
good. Okay.
Okay.
The funding was your liquid assets were transferred for the firefighting effort?
They were. Nationally, the Forest Service was asked to put forth all the dollars that hadn't been spent in July towards the fire suppression efforts nationally. So on our particular unit, $3.2 million was pulled from land acquisitions for that effort.
And how does that money get restored?
Congress will include that as part of our appropriations package. It's separate from a direct appropriations. So we will expect that when the appropriations bill is passed. We're working on a continuing resolution right now, so I would guess that would probably be February. And that $3.2 million has been explained to us that that would be in addition to the $10 million we would expect for fiscal year 03.
So perhaps one of the things that this committee might do would be to take a position in support of that full appropriation.
I don't think we can hear that. I think he pulled the plug.
We have a loose plug.
Well, see, I suggested that he turn the microphone towards the audience. And,
is that better? Okay.
It's my fault. Sorry.
All right. So one of the things I think that this committee might do, and maybe perhaps even in connection with our colleagues in Washington, is to write a letter in support of the $13.5 million appropriation, restoring the 3.2 that was transferred, and then the $10 million that was expected for the fiscal year.
That would allow us to stay on track, yes.
Okay, and if we get off the track, that obviously is going to collapse some of that program into succeeding fiscal years. And it just seems like every time we get off those tracks in that sort of a collapse, things fall through the cracks or opportunities are missed.
That is the case. And in this particular case, as of March 2004, all those cases that we are not able to complete will turn to GMA.
If you don't mind, turn around and look behind you, because what you didn't watch was the audience passing the entire length of the cable for the speakers over their heads in unison. It was poetry.
It's good teamwork, huh?
Hey, we can buy with a little help from our friends.
Good. Okay, I think we're back in business. I think that at least helps me understand where we are in the summary of priorities. Does the committee have any further questions about the acquisition process or the 8-0 process? Senator Metzger.
Just one question. These are the total number of dollars in acreage that have been acquired. Is the assumption correct that all these are private property acquisitions, or are some of these acquired from other government entities like county governments, et cetera?
The lands under the transfer category were all BLM lands, and then when the scenic area came into existence, the BLM lands were transferred into Forest Service. So those were all federal lands when they transfer. Some of the donated lands, I believe, came from Wasco County. And the bulk of the exchange parcel and fee lands are private. Actually, there was a sizable exchange with Hood River County recently that really contributed to the exchange acres and Hood River going up. So, yeah, they're all, they're state, federal, county, kind of a mix.
So it's kind of hard to get it really a percentage at this time. I'm sure you have that. That might be an interesting thing in your maybe the first quarterly update that Senator Farrielli has asked for in terms of, and maybe I'm the only one just curious, but as to how many of these were public lands under some other jurisdiction as opposed to fee simple lands of individual owners on a percentage basis, I think would just be interesting to know.
Yeah, we could certainly get that to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I think you your line of questioning points to at least a interesting topic for discussion. If the lands are owned by other federal agencies and they're transferred, they're already in public ownership. But will those transfers go on the books with a dollar amount attached to them, and will that use part of your appropriation? Are we buying federal land from federal agencies with federal dollars?
No, not at all. No, those BLM transferred lands, it was just a paper transfer. There wasn't any consideration involved.
Thank you. I'm comforted by that. Representative Smith has a question.
Or thank comment. You, Chair Farrielli. I have a question on the, when you've given us the numbers for the ones that had the high priority, low priorities that you've purchased, how long does it take from start to end to do that? and is it done by a property? I mean, does it, how long, give me an average, how long it takes to complete a sale?
Once we actually initiate the acquisition process, and under these circumstances, obviously people are waiting months to a year or more before we can even pick up the case to start it. But once we pick up a case and start it, it typically takes about a year. It really depends on how complex the title issues are, and sometimes there's actions like quiet title actions or title clearing actions that can really set back a case, but about an average length of time is about a year.
Well, then, when you don't buy them and purchase them, and then they're going to revert back to GMA, what happens at that point? Who does the zone? Do they have to be rezoned at the federal level, at your level?
From an acquisition standpoint, at that point, we re-verify with the land. If we're in the process of acquiring a property and during that time frame it changes to GMA ordinances, we re-verify with the landowner that they wish to continue with the acquisition process. Some landowners are just happy with the GMA and at that point they want to walk away. Others want to continue the process.
Right, but my question is then, when does it revert from SMA to GMA?
Three years from the date of offer, so it's variable depending on the offer date.
And is that something you do or at the county level?
We definitely track the date, but I believe the county does as well. I couldn't speak to that.
Okay.
But 3 days from the date we receive an offer is when the...
3 years, you mean?
From the date we receive the offer in the office is when the GMA change would occur if we don't acquire the property.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Any further questions on the acquisitions? So if I understand correctly, then in 2004, the process for voluntary acquisition or voluntary sale in the SMA would hit a deadline. Can you explain what happens after that deadline?
After the deadline, the SMA lands that have not been purchased by the Forest Service, where an offer has been made, would then be transferred to GMA designation. And during the acquisition process, we do what's called a final acquisition evaluation. And during that evaluation is how we prioritize whether or not it was a high priority or a low priority for acquisition. And we also make a recommendation at that time what GMA designation it would fall into should we not be able to accomplish the acquisition.
Okay. And if the transfer from SMA to GMA occurs, how does that change the status of the property?
It can be developed to what is appropriate under that GMA designation.
So then at that point, the county zoning and the GMA zoning would be the two considerations for the landowner.
Right.
Okay. Any further questions? I understand that after our discussion yesterday, Ms. Titus, you looked at the file in question and have maybe some observations you could share with the committee.
On the Witham case?
On the Witham case.
I do. I have a copy of the Witham file to share with you. And
bless you. Proceed.
That was good stress relief there. And the facts that were presented by Mr. Witham pretty much are correct, and there's a few missing pieces that I thought I would bring forward. First of all, his request to exchange properties started 16 years ago when the Scenic Area Act was put into place. And the Forest Service does not do exchanges for properties usually of that size because there needs to be a benefit to the government. The process takes just as long for us to do 5 acres as it does 500 acres, and therefore there's a benefit of scale. As well as at the time, we were spending our energy doing some pretty large land acquisitions from SDS and other landowners. So while I couldn't find any documentation of anything that would have told them it would have taken that long, it definitely wouldn't have been something we would have tackled in the first few years. We do have records of Mr. Witham accepting or offering his property up for sale, and I do have documentation of our first draft analysis that would indicate that it was an SMA of low priority. And then that evaluation that I spoke of, it was a draft acquisition evaluation where we commented, we gave an original estimate that it would be low priority and also said that we were going to send it out for public comment for 30 days. The comment period is something that is an internal 30-day period we do just so our decision-making process can stay on track. There is no law that requires us to have it just 30 days. And as a decision-maker, I can tell you that it's important for me to always consider all the facts in making a decision. And if important information comes in a couple of days after, I would consider that information in this particular case, regardless of the date. However, the state of Washington, Fish and Wildlife Service did submit a letter by the due date, and the letter was so general that we requested some specifics, and they sent an additional letter about 3 weeks later. And it was that additional letter that Mr. Witham was referring to yesterday. Then the decision was made by Dan Harkin-Reiter, who is the area manager, to change the priority of that piece of property from low to high based on what we heard from Washington Fish and Wildlife and the two other comment letters. And we did not receive any comments from Mr. Witham himself. And then at that point, apparently Mr. Witham did come into the office and was concerned that there had been a visit to his property without his permission. And there is a letter in the file apologizing for that. It was our interpretation that when he offered the property that we would be able to assess the conditions on the property, and that we misinterpreted that, and we apologized. And then just basically, the final determination that it's high priority acquisition and follow-up of the visits that he came to us explaining in detail what I just briefly went over. And then we also have a permission to enter the property that was signed by Mr. Witham of May of this year. So we have tried to correct the issues of entering his property without permission over time with Mr. Witham.
So, in fact, Mr. Witham eventually did sign a permission?
He did, on May 02.
And there was an apology made for the entry without permission?
It's in the letter.
Mr. Witham testified that the initial assessment of the Department of Fish and Wildlife was that the property had a low value in terms of habitat. No pine and a very high unlikelihood that there were a squirrel habitat there. I guess I'd be interested to know, if I may, what it was that the Department of Fish and Wildlife testified to that made the agency determine that it was a high priority for acquisition.
May I read a small paragraph from that letter? This is the second letter we received. The first letter just generally talked about oak woodlands as a high priority in the gorge, and we requested some more specific information because we were dealing with individual property owners. And the response was received about 3 weeks later, and it says parcel Q, which is the Witham property, is currently rated as medium, in part because of a paved county road runs through it. However, it's high quality, mature oak habitat. Such habitat is fairly rare in this area. Many of the existing stands of oak elsewhere are immature and are years away from being insignificant mass producers, even with vegetative manipulation. Parcel Q is adjacent to existing Forest Service property, so it would be relatively easy to treat the area as a single management unit. For these reasons, we recommend upgrading this parcel to high.
Mr. Witham testified that he had no intention of removing the timber from that parcel. And I guess I'm wondering if that enters into the consideration at all as the intended use of that property.
Senator Ferrioli, as a land manager, I really have to consider what the uses will be, you know, multi-generations ahead of right now. And while that's probably the case with Mr. Witham, there's no guarantee that 50 years from now that would be the case, and these land designations will be in place for many years to come. So we look at what the potential would be.
As I understand it, Mr. Witham is in line for an offer for the property. So he will be made an offer for that property for purchase. Mm-hmm. Do you know when that might happen?
Probably about 4 to 6 months. We're waiting on Mr. Witham to choose an appraiser, and once he does that, we can move forward with appraising the property. And that process takes, I don't know, usually 3 to 4 months. So between 4 and 6 months, we'll have an offer to him, I expect.
Would it be appropriate for me to briefly go over how we do the appraisal process, since there are many questions along those lines?
Oh, actually, I think we would like to hear about that, but I'd like to pursue this line, if I may. If Mr. Witham does receive an offer within that 6-month period and chooses to decline the offer to purchase, what is then the status of his property?
He will remain SMA.
He will remain SMA.
Yes.
And I guess I was under the impression if he had if an offer was made that he refused, that somehow that would change the status of the property. Is that not the case?
Section 80 of the Scenic Area Act itself says that if a landowner declines an offer made within that 3-year period, then the offer is considered not bona fide and the ordinances remain special management area. So as part of the Scenic Area Act itself, that specifies that.
So he would remain in the SMA under any circumstances?
His zoning and ordinances would remain special management area.
So at this point, it remains for the appraiser to be designated?
Correct. Mr. Witham is choosing the appraiser, and we've been waiting for a few weeks for him to make that decision.
Okay. If Mr. Witham's property had been in a low priority, remained in the low priority category, and no offer was made on the property, would it therefore then revert to a GMA designation?
Yes. 3 years from the date we receive the offer, if we make no offer, the ordinances would change to GMA.
And is it now contemplated that there will be additional, or that there will be additions to the SMA or the high priority list that you're working on?
We review that list regularly, and because we often include public comment on our priority process, it is possible that the priorities can change.
Okay. So I guess what I'm hearing is that landowners that are in the SMA that are currently designated low priority have no guarantee that their properties wouldn't be designated high priority at some point between now and the deadline.
Well, there's no guarantees, and they are also welcome to make comment during that period as well. It's a public process. We try to include as many comments as possible.
If the deadline occurs and the agency's not able to make offers on all the SMA property that it would like to, then they would revert to GMA.
Correct.
And at this point, is it contemplated that there will be an extension of the deadline or additional appropriations that you're aware of?
Not that we're aware of.
That it could happen.
Our workload is so heavy that I guess I hope not, but yeah, it's like that's possible.
All right. Well, I appreciate the update on the status. I think that there was some confusion about all the information that was presented yesterday, and I probably will ask you at some point in time to sit down and go through the public portion of that file with you. Members of the committee, do you have any further questions? Representative Smith?
Thank you. I have one question. You talked about the intent not to harvest the trees, that it would be generational, that you couldn't control it. Couldn't a deed restriction on the property that went with the property take care of that issue?
It would. The general management areas are much more lenient, and it is possible to harvest trees, build multiple structures, etc. And so the level of development, generally speaking with GMA, is much greater than a special management area, which development is not allowed.
But a deed restriction goes with the property. It doesn't go with the zoning.
We typically, deed restrictions take someone to monitor to make sure that the restrictions are in fact being honored, and that takes staffing and money, and so we don't like really to be put in a monitoring position on private land. So although on the surface it would appear to be that way, then someone is going to always have to monitor and keep an eye on these things, and they can get, they can take a lot of time.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Any further questions from the committee?
I guess I understand the intention of preserving the high-quality old-growth oak habitat, but that has to be tempered with the knowledge that the agency cannot guarantee that high-quality old-growth oak habitat will be maintained past the next fire season or through the cycles of insects and disease and wildfire that are typical in the disturbance.
On our priority process, it is possible that the priorities can change.
Okay. So I guess what I'm hearing is that landowners that are in the SMA that are currently designated low priority have no guarantee that their properties wouldn't be designated high priority at some point between now and the deadline.
Well, there's no guarantees, and they are also welcome to make comment during that period as well. It's a public process. We try to include as many comments as possible.
If the deadline occurs and the agency's not able to make offers on all the SMA property that it would like to, then they would revert to GMA.
Correct.
And at this point, is it contemplated that there will be an extension of the deadline or additional appropriations that you're aware of?
Not that we're aware of.
That it could happen.
Anything, our workload is so heavy that I hope not, but yeah, it's like that's possible.
All right, well, I appreciate the update on the status. I think that there was some confusion about all the information that was presented yesterday, and I probably will ask you at some point in time to sit down and go through the public portion of that file with you. Members of the committee, do you have any further questions? Representative Smith?
Thank you. I have one question. You talked about the intent not to harvest the trees, that it would be generational, that you couldn't control it. Couldn't a deed restriction on the property that went with the property take care of that issue?
It would. The general management areas are much more lenient, and it is possible to harvest trees, build multiple structures, etc. And so the level of development, generally speaking with GMA, is much greater than a special management area, which development is not allowed.
But a deed restriction goes with the property. It doesn't go with the zoning.
We typically, deed restrictions take someone to monitor to make sure that the restrictions are in fact being honored, and that takes staffing and money, and so we don't like really to be put in a monitoring position on private land. So although on the surface it would appear to be that way, then someone is going to always have to monitor and keep an eye on these things, and they can get they can take a lot of time.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Any further questions from the committee? I guess I understand the intention of preserving the high-quality old-growth oak habitat, but that has to be tempered with the knowledge that the agency cannot guarantee that high-quality old-growth oak habitat will be maintained past the next fire season
or through the cycles of insects and disease and wildfire that are typical in the disturbance regime that we have in throughout the Pacific Northwest. So I guess I find the acquisition issue, just because it has a particular forest stage, a cereal stage, as a high priority, a little bit hard to comprehend. It's a high site, old growth oak forest today, and you can look back, a couple of hundred years maybe, without knowing, what the age of those trees are. And maybe that's the site, that's the type of forest that site produces. But I guess looking down through future generations, you'd have no guarantee, even if it was in Forest Service ownership, that it would remain in that category. Was that taken into consideration when the high priority was set on the property?
When we make land management decisions in the Forest Service as a whole, I'm talking, bigger picture nationally, we manage habitats, and we understand there's a cyclic nature to those habitats, and all we can do is minimize known impacts as best we can, or mitigate known impacts. And human development is one of those things that we can mitigate for. Fires, etc., are things that are difficult to mitigate for. And so we just do the best we can with what we have. And this particular piece of ground was designated special management area, and therefore, based on the habitat that's present, and that the western gray owl is a sensitive species in the state of Washington, decision was made to move it to a high priority.
And is it primarily for the owl that we're...
Oh, you know what? It's not an owl. It's a squirrel.
Squirrel.
You guys got me all nervous. Spotted owl.
New species.
I heard you say that.
Squirrel, owl. Squirrel. If the effect is the same. Well, I appreciate that. And I guess the, that just streams a whole series of questions. Is the prioritization decision appealable? I mean, you could drive yourself crazy with this thing, but I guess the question for me, there's certainly a couple of hundred landowners that have a very large interest in how their properties are designated and in what priority, and what happens to them in the SMA if they are determined to be high priority, and if an offer does come, or if an offer comes but it's not adequate for their needs, or if no offer comes, because there's incredibly, there's a different downset of effects that happens. And I think landowners feel they're pretty powerless to control what happens to them. And I think that always gives rise to feelings of injustice in the process. Is it transparent? Is it clear to people what the processes are? Is there a fact sheet or a flow chart showing people what happens in this decision-making process, so that that can be used as an outreach education tool to landowners to let them know where they are and how they might be affected by the process?
We sent all the landowners who fell in SMA designation a description of the amendment, so they would understand that they had the potential to offer their property up. And then once we receive an offer, a letter is sent to them that would describe the process. And that starts with the appraisal process and goes on through. There have been many people who have stopped in the office and sat down with us face-to-face to ask specific questions. But I think that the idea of a flow chart, something pictorial, is a good idea. Right now, it's just words.
Okay. Well, in this age of mass communications, maybe somebody could work something out that could be posted on the Internet, because I have this sense that there's probably several hundred property owners that are interested to know what is the process and how might they fit in it, and even more important, how might they get out of it if they wish to do that. Further questions from the committee? Hearing and seeing none. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate
sure.
your willingness to bring the information back to the committee.
Thank you.
Further invited testimony, Bobby Miller. Ms. Miller was in attendance last night, and for the convenience of the committee, was rescheduled to this morning.
I think we can hear better now. Thank you. We've waited so long for this.
Ma'am, would you introduce yourself to the committee?
Yes, I'm Bobby Miller, and I live in the Dalles. I'm wearing very many hats, as I told Ted, so please bear with me. I represent myself, I represent our committee, I represent Columbia Guards United, and I've got some updates from some of the material from yesterday. And by the way, I brought the flowers to you today to look at. We've been labeled property owners like we're destroying the gorge. We believe in the beauty of the gorge, and you know, you can have beauty. So these are for you to appreciate while you look at our faces. To begin with, there was a document that Judy Bartel gave yesterday. She was one of the first ones, and you requested the whole form, so I made copies of that today. This is dated October 9th, so this is just last week that we got this from the county. And it just points out the confusion that people have. For instance, this property and my own property, we're really in town, but we're not per se inside city limits. So this particular property is having to abide by city rules, county rules, and Gorge Commission. And this property cannot be seen from anything that could possibly represent a key viewing area. The point of this document is to say that we need some flexibility. You can't just write a law and says every property that is in the Scenic Act has to live by these rules, and particularly in this one, which was so restrictive, the property owner has zero choice of what they do in their colors. So I brought that for you. That's one hat, okay? The next one is from our survey, and I had some people turn this in to me yesterday. She didn't get a copy of the survey, and she wanted me to read this to you. They wanted to come. They were unable to be here. Her husband has had a stroke. So this is property on Snowden Road, 20 acres, purchased in 1978. And this is what they've written. As part of our dream home, we wanted to construct a semi-covered, energy-efficient home in addition to our little cabin that we built of poured concrete. We even excavated the site and had the plans drawn. The Gorge Commission said no. We had a full day hearing with the Gorge Commission and lost. Here is why. The commission claimed that our property could be seen from the river. Wrong. Prior to the hearing, the commission members were to inspect the site. Of the 12, only two did inspect the site and voted for us. Since I conducted our own hearings, I made the mistake of not asking each commission member if they had inspected the site. If they said no, then no vote. What was so unfair is that there were already two 10-acre parcels in ours, and ours was denied for some unknown reason, like adverse growth in the area. But on the comment things they put, when we put on this survey, may we use your survey information as testimony, and they comment dissolve the commission. And when we had listed on property loss, the commission would not allow us to divide the 20 acres to construct a semi-covered dwelling. There are already two 10-acre parcels. We asked for a financial economic loss, and they put around $40,000. We had to sell our property in 1998 and move to the Dalles. So that's to add to our survey document. Okay, now I'm down to my story, which also includes as a representative of Columbia Gorge United. You heard yesterday from Bill Schmidt, who represents the Gorge Reality, and then we had Rita Suarez and myself, the three of us that served on this committee to do this survey. So this is a little bit about my life and how I came about with this. I've been involved with this legislation before it was. I had heard there were talk of federal involvement in the Gorge, and we lived in Rowena at the time. Our women's club saw a film on what happened in the Cuyahoga Valley, and it sounded like we were headed that direction. Soon I heard that a committee was being formed in our county called a Gorge Overlay. I became a member of that, thinking that we can manage this gorge on our own. We on a local level and state level of this gorge, and we can write our own rules to protect it. As this committee worked its way through Bayan's material, I soon realized that this was going far more than just protecting the gorge. We did talk of reflective windows and lights, and soon there were a few of us that began feeling that this and uncomfortable with this process. We ended up writing a minority report. Okay. As I look back, I realize I've been ahead from the beginning. This was the beginning of countless meetings and years of handwriting on the wall, and all the time and energy that was wasted was a done deal. The decisions were made, and you have those wonderful meetings that you got the public input, so you sign up because of consensus. Isn't that a wonderful word? I soon joined Columbia Gorge United and helped raise money to send the telegrams to President Reagan telling him not to sign this. About this time, I also was concerned about what was happening in Wasco County with a certain red clad group in the community of Antelope. I remember telling local people that this was a bad deal, but the future that we had coming down the pike was going to be far worse than the cult. Lo and behold, what do we have? Many people have already told me how sorry they were they didn't listen. Well, after all, everyone loves the gorge. Who wouldn't want to save it? Columbia Gorge United soon had a large organization. We raised money to hire lawyers to take our case through the court system on this being unconstitutional. I know that many of our friends gave and gave and gave. They gave their coin collections, their guns, whatever they could to pay our bills. We are all just property owners who love our country. We have no hired administrators, no lawyers, no staff, compared to our friends of the gorge who have well-paid staff. We did take it through the court system. We did end up at the Supreme Court. Now you will hear that we lost at the Supreme Court. <That's it. laughs> We did not lose at the Supreme Court. Our case was not heard. At the time that decision was made, the attorneys that make the decisions that the Supreme Court will hear shortly before that.
We're going to take a 5-minute recess to work on the sound system.
Okay.
We're back from a brief technical difficulty recess. Somebody suggested that we stop timing the witnesses with the basketball shot clock. We'll try to proceed and see how things work.
Okay.
Ms. Miller, if you could continue.
Thank you very much. Where I ended was we talked about the Supreme Court and our case was not heard. In the meantime, the Gorge Commission was established and we of CGU attended faithfully. In fact, our S. and Smith spent years taping these sessions. We were the ones that told about the makeup of the commission, that many were also on the board of directors of the Friends. We had a huge demonstration called Hands Across the Bridge one day at noon, and we had over 400 people from two states. We carried flags to demonstrate that two states can handle this. We met with Senator Hatfield, and he was so surprised to know that there were problems with property rights. We unfortunately believed him until he had this meeting when he got out of office in Hood River. Instead of hearing of the problems, the room was packed with those who helped with the legislation with a pat on the back. Oh, by the way, the dear senator promised that when he was out of office, he would tell the story of how he was able to pull this off and get the president to sign. This statement was made by him at the groundbreaking of the Discovery Center. We're still waiting for the truth. The Gorge Commission members have changed with political appointees. Each time, we still hope to get some common sense members who can understand that we, the people who live in the scenic area, what we are going through. Only one of the original Gorge Commission members is still on. One of the original members who I felt was really with us, he owned property in the scenic area. His name was Pat Blakeney. And what happened to him? He sold out, getting $839,000, which was $394,000 over the county assessed value. He sold an additional 3,000 acres to the state parks, $8,700 over the county assessed value, and his wife wrote a book. I am supplying an attachment to my testimony that tells the entire story that was written by Janice Sauter of the Klickitat County Monitor. And so that's printed in this report. It's hooked together, so it's a little confusing to read, but it tells the whole story of that transaction and what happened there. We've had several changes of directors. It all seems with direct ties to the Friends. It would be very, very interesting to follow the trail of former commission members as well, directors, and following the money trail. So when people tell you they are the caretakers of the gorge, open your eyes and see who gets paybacks. Few seem to realize that the property owners are the caretakers. After all, what was there to save if people had not cared? The hysteria that was promoted were statements that huge shopping centers and massive buildup was going to take place in the gorge. There's no mention that the way the gorge is formed and the land use laws that were already in place long before the Scenic Act would have never allowed that to happen. But it worked.
Mr. Miller?
Mm-hmm.
I've just noticed that you've got the statement that you're reading from is 6 pages.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you to summarize the
okay.
5 pages, but then, ma'am, if you would please, go to your suggested solutions.
Okay.
And I'd like you to go ahead and enter those for the record.
Okay.
The things that you think that we could do to improve the functioning of the Gorge Commission.
Okay. People are sick of being treated unfairly, and that's one thing here. I wanted to explain my own personal experience where we own property in Rowena. We bought that property 30 years ago, and what we lost when we tried to sell that property, we had to accept $30,000 underneath the assessed value. We ended up building in town where we had further problems because the land we bought in town is also in the scenic area. So we're in town, but we're not inside city limits, so we had to abide by all the rules like I referred to the earlier article about. So we did fuss about the color of our roof, and we did get through them that we didn't have to have a black roof. So we're out $60,000. And I want to tell you about the environmentalists tell you that you have to preserve land. Well, I want to mention that we take care of the wildlife at our place, too. They've eaten the trees and they've eaten the apricots. So we try to be positive every time there's a new director, but it's hard, kind of hard when you look up, pick up the paper and you read about how economics is pretty well suffering. Economics was equal part of this legislation. There's more talk of air quality. And I don't understand how we're going to have money to support all of these things. And you as legislators, I hope you have some rich pocketbooks, because how are you going to fund all of this gorge stuff that was requested of you and fund our schools? Something I've asked for many, many times is that citizen review board, and that came up many times yesterday. We've asked for common sense. I mentioned in this article I've got here about the bee house, because I think this is a prime example of how something could have worked out. I attended all of those hearings, and the bees admitted they'd made mistakes, the county admitted they made mistakes, the Gorge Commission never once admitted to any mistakes. Had they only admitted that, say, well, you know, we should go ahead and learn from this, but they were pretty arrogant about this, and here these people are still not in their home. Now, on this separate agenda, I want to talk about the county, and I've had some conversation with Greg Walden, and he tells me that 56% of Oregon is controlled by the federal government. In some counties, more than 75% is off the tax rolls. And I've tried to do some research in our county on this, and now I find out that we're even underneath the United Nations. I went to the Gorge Commission and asked about, or our county commission and the Gorge Commission asked about that, and I put an attachment in your article on that, too. So this refers to what's happened in the counties. I did get copies from the Forest Service, and I have made just one copy for those for you today, because that was something that came up yesterday. The Forest Service, to begin with, paid 1%, and that was supposed to be for 5 years. Then they added another 3 years to that, but we are already at 7 years. So after this next year, the counties will get nothing. And what is that 1% on? This is not the true market value. For instance, some of these transactions are dated to 1988. What's that land worth today? There's quite a discrepancy if you'll check that Wasco County was the only one that I did the research on. So on the first one there, there's quite a discrepancy on this Claude Berthold, and there were 160 acres, total taxes paid, $499. I know this property owner, and I called her to ask about it, and she's out of town, or she'd have come to testify today. She did tell me that she was very upset with this because they had a gravel pit that was worth far more than the whole ranch of what they sold off, and they got zero out of that. I did have time to do, did not have time to do research on each parcel, but I did remember that there were transactions with Trust for Public Land and Nancy Russell. Out of the 35 transactions in Wasco County, 7 were run by TPL and one with Nancy Russell and one with her husband Bruce. A total of 3,099 acres of land in one county, and receipts to Wasco County after 7 years is only 110,000. That's not much going back to the county, and I think the county commissioner should be really concerned about that. Then in 1993, Trust for Public Land bought property in Rowena. That was called Hog Canyon back there. This the owner was paid $904,000. 6 minutes later, Trust for Public Land recorded selling their property to the Forest Service for $1,130,000. Less than 10 minutes, the nonprofit agency made $226,000. This is not just a fluke, but a regular happening. Our CGU group had done research in the past, and we have one more example for you. In 1980, the town of Wyeth, two pieces of land were purchased on $2,000 options. At 11:22, the first block was purchased for $750,000. 11:23, the Trust for Public Land sold it to the Forest Service for $940,000. 3 minutes later, the second option was executed, and TPL bought the next block for $170,000. So it was sold 1 minute later to the Forest Service for $292,000. So the nonprofit group made $311,000 in 10 minutes using your tax dollars. Okay, on the bottom of this sheet is the Ellett property, just recently sold after many years, and I'm sorry to say that Mr. Ellett didn't live to see the completion of this. They have a huge piece of land that is now unavailable, but it is being settled. The taxes are not even, the county will get nothing on this property, and it's from under my understanding with talking to Vicki, they have to pay even some other money that they didn't know about that they're pretty upset about. Okay, I also want to know about the Discovery Center. We built that Discovery Center, and that was so wonderful. But I was kind of worried that maybe that was going to be on the back of the Wasco County taxpayers also. So I talked to the director out there, and he said the Forest Service pays nothing for this facility, and the attendance is not keeping up with the cost. They have to raise $100,000 every year to keep it going. And then I mentioned to him, I said, you have all these wonderful plaques out here at the Discovery Center with all these people that donated, and where's the plaques of the property owners? They paid a bigger price than any of them. Well, I'm not a paid investigator, and I have given up much time to look into this. But if you want a wonderful background of the story of what transpired in the scenic area, in this book, Trashing the Economy, there's a page on 212. It tells the whole story of the Columbia River Scenic Act and the players. 214 tells how Friends of the Gorge was formed by Multnomah County Executive Don Clark in 1980. He brought Nancy Russell on board as chairman. There's plenty on the article and about Senator Hatfield. Why did he want a front group to push gorge legislation? One of the senator's good friends and political support was John Gray, developer of Salishan Lodge. And of course, who was the owner and developer of Skamania Lodge? This book lists the economy trashers and the income and connections. The Sierra Club and Trust for Public Lands are virtually partners. Now, solutions. There must be some changes made, and there need to be many investigations into the gorge staff and the closeness of the friends, and I think this was pointed out very well in our survey report of yesterday. The Forest Service and their dealings with the friends, who do you think this does, what do you think this does to the property owner when he finds out the nonprofit made off his land to a nonprofit agency? How much land will we continue to take off the tax rolls? What are counties supposed to do? This Scenic Act needs to get back to the federal level. It is so corrupt. In the meantime, turn the work over to the counties. They adopted the ordinances, and they are to manage. Ironically, I came across a copy of the draft dated April 7, 1992, and I quote, "Once the county adopts the National Scenic Ordinances, the Gorge Commissioners will no longer make land use reviews," end of quote. So why do we need them? Something has got to be done about the interference by the Friends of the Gorge on property owners as well as the county planning departments. Staff of the Gorge Commission needs to be challenged. Gorge commissioners should be elected and live in the gorge. Give the property owners some respect. After all, there would be no gorge to protect if the property owners had not saved it to begin with. Set up the review board that would and help save stress and dollars to you and everyone else. Thank you.
Witness submitted some documentation on behalf of witness Judy Bartell. That'll be entered into the record for Jack and Judy Bartell. And the written portion of the testimony will also be added to the, okay, the information that you provided verbally. And we'll index the solution suggestions that you made for the record as well. It would be possible for this committee to ask for a review by the Oregon Secretary of State's office, not a performance review, but a compliance review for the acquisitions that involve tax dollars that are utilized in the Gorge Scenic Area for acquisitions. And that would be simply a request to the audit committee to prioritize an audit review to make sure that the counties are receiving the payments in lieu of taxes that were promised. That's certainly an area within our purview. And also that transactions are being accomplished according to the Oregon revised statutes involving real estate transactions for full disclosure. So those are two things that we could do in terms of utilization of our audit function under the Secretary of State's office and the legislature. Any questions for Ms. Miller from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony, and we have copies of the document.
I have this other sheets to give you. These are copies that I made this morning that does show all of the counties and the land acquisitions through the Forest Service.
If you'll submit those, we'll make sure that they go into the public record and that committee members get those.
And just one closing comment. I do have a constitution if anybody hasn't read the Fifth Amendment. Of the draft dated April 7, 1992, and I quote, "Once the county adopts the National Scenic Ordinances, the Gorge Commissioners will no longer make land use reviews," end of quote. So why do we need them? Something has got to be done about the interference by the Friends of the Gorge on property owners as well as the county planning departments. Staff of the Gorge Commission needs to be challenged. Gorge commissioners should be elected and live in the gorge. Give the property owners some respect. After all, there would be no gorge to protect if the property owners had not saved it to begin with. Set up the review board that would and help save stress and dollars to you and everyone else. Thank you.
Witness submitted some documentation on behalf of witness Judy Bartell. That'll be entered into the record. For Jack and Judy Bartell, and the written portion of the testimony will also be added to the, the information that you provided verbally, and we'll index the solution suggestions that you made for the record as well. It would be possible for this committee to ask for a review by the Oregon Secretary of State's office, not a performance review, but a compliance review, for the acquisitions that involve tax dollars that are utilized in the Gorge Scenic Area for acquisitions. And that would be simply a request to the audit committee to prioritize an audit review to make sure that the counties are receiving the payments in lieu of taxes that were promised. That's certainly an area within our purview, and also that transactions are being accomplished according to the Oregon revised statutes involving real estate transactions for full disclosure. So those are two things that we could do in terms of utilization of our audit function under the Secretary of State's office and the legislature. Any questions for Ms. Miller from the committee? Thank you very much for your testimony, and we have copies of the documents.
I have this other sheets to give you. These are copies that I made this morning that does show all of the counties and the land acquisitions through the Forest Service.
If you'll submit those, we'll make sure that they go into the public record and that committee members get those.
And just one closing comment. I do have a constitution if anybody hasn't read the Fifth Amendment. It needs to be read.
And normally, legislators are connected to the Fifth Amendment in another way, ma'am, but we'll look at those documents. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Chuck comes next, and then...
Actually, we have Jane Webb in
the audience. Oh, she's
right here. Is Ms. Webb in the audience? Jane Webb, would you come forward, please? Ms. Miller's testimony concludes the invited testimony, so we'll move to the witness list. I'm calling Jane Webb since she has a time constraint. Would you simply speak your name for the record, Ms. Webb, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm Jana Webb from the Dalles Oregon, and thank you. I do have an ill uncle in the hospital that needs some attention. I haven't been to these before, so this is the first time, and I'm a little nervous. I wanted to address the issue of open space designations in the Gorge between general management and special management. I have written a statement. I don't need to read it. I'd like you all to have a copy of it and read it. It addresses the transaction that just happened on the Chenoweth table. The issues that I feel are unfair for everybody between open space, general management, and special management. Open space designation eliminates all previous land use designations and allows only low impact recreation. We were told on our property that means no horseback riding, no cattle grazing, anything like that. We are the second largest landowner of open space on the Chenoweth table, but yet our land was not considered for the special adjustments to be purchased. We, right after it was designated open space, and I've talked about it in here, were required to hire a surveyor, survey out of the middle of our property, the open space, fence it, so that we could utilize the balance of the pasture as we had in the previous years. We have been told many times we cannot ride our horses on that property. We are allowed to only hike there. So now that we're going to have a public park next door, I'm sure that we are looking at increased harassment from the public with motorcycles, which we have called about in the past and have gotten no help from the Gorge or the Forest Service or anyone with trying to police our property with the damage of the public access. So I guess 58% of our property on the Chenoweth table was put into open space, and we've received no compensation for the loss of use or the loss of value. We also were affected earlier by a piece of property that was bound by the urban growth of the Dalles, and we fought that battle 10 years ago and lost that, and so our property was devalued greatly, and it was a tremendous financial and emotional setback for us. So when the Ellet property was purchased because of special adjustments, and it was general management open space, along with that, according to the article in the Dalles Chronicle, they not only purchased the open space, they purchased 140 acres of small small agriculture land. So they not only made a special adjustment for general management open space, they purchased land that was not open space. And so I just feel that this is just one more story of the inequities of the open space designation. And I know there's lots of them in the gorge. So thank you for your time. I would just like someone to explain to me at some point why the legislation, there was a difference between general management and special management, and no one's ever been able to do that. And I've repeatedly brought that up. So I'll give you a copy of this, and thank you for your time.
Ma'am, before you leave, the committee members may have questions.
Oh, okay.
Questions for this? Yeah,
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Beck has a question.
Ms. Webb, wasn't your family involved with some kind of arbitration over some of the open space? Wasn't there a committee formed? I think former U.S. Attorney Sid Bezak was involved with some kind.
Yes, that is true.
We
had a piece of property that is bordered on three sides by the city of the Dalles. It was zoned R5. We had a land use designation through LUBBA at the time to include it in the urban growth boundary and be considered for city limits of the Dalles. That's 35 acres. They allowed us to put 20 home sites on that 35 acres. That was not feasible. The person who did eventually buy it and try to develop the 20 home sites went broke because the cost of development with the restrictions placed the property above what he could get a return on it. And he has gone broke. The first mortgage holder, I believe, picked up the property, and most of those lots are still vacant because the cost is prohibitive. So we've had our R5 zoning on that, proposed to go to R1 before the gorge came in. And yes, we to get the 20 home sites, we would not have been allowed them had we not offered and signed an agreement to give Nature Conservancy first right of refusal on the purchase of the open space if it is ever sold. So in our book, that was kind of blackmail, but otherwise we'd have had no return on the lower acreage at all.
I was just wondering whether this...
Follow-up, Representative?
Yeah, follow-up. I was just wondering whether this has anything to do with whether that situation was relevant to what you were talking about in your testimony. It sounds like it was slightly different.
It was slightly different. We still own the open space. We did sign an agreement that if we ever sell it, that Nature Conservancy would have the first option on that.
Okay, follow-up questions?
Follow-up, Representative Beck.
Now, this came up yesterday at the hearing, but are you suggesting, are you upset that the Ellets were able to sell their property? And are you wishing that landowners like you could do the same and get the same?
I think everyone should be treated equal. I would like to know what the special adjustments were to allow them to sell general management open space plus small scale ag, and the rest of us aren't given that option,
right?
And are given no compensation for loss of use or value to our land.
Another question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up, Representative Beck.
Have you approached the Forest Service to offer your property? Would you be a willing seller? You may don't want to answer that now, but is it something you at least want to have as an option
of
to
course.
Sell your property to the government?
Of course.
Yeah.
I just feel that all the landowners in the gorge should be treated equally.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Beck.
Well, I just think this reinforces some of what we talked about yesterday. With getting the Forest Service at some point more actively involved acquiring general management area lands. This is something a lot of people had hoped would happen years ago. And I'm not sure the time right now is appropriate, but at some point, I think the Forest Service ought to be more focused or as focused on key GMA lands as they are in special management area land. So I think it's a good suggestion that as landowners made. I understand the priorities now are in the special management areas, but I do think there are people who have general management area properties that they may want to convey to the Forest Service and which the public may want in public ownership. So I think that this is, now we've heard this from a couple of different people, I think it's a good comment.
I would like to ask a question.
That's unusual. We may choose to answer your question. You may ask it.
Well, I share Bobby's concern with tax dollars being lost to the county through this,
yes,
too. And I mean, we've lost in Wasco County, you know, the timber revenues, and it's kind of a tight situation for lots of counties now. And if the government owns all the land, where do we go from there?
That is a good question, and I think becoming less rhetorical since Oregon's private economy has lost $25 billion since the beginning of the, since the end of our last legislative session in 2001. So tax dollars are becoming more scarce, and clearly anything that erodes the base of local jurisdictions makes that local jurisdiction far more dependent on the state general fund. And the state general fund's depleted. So, mm-hmm. Representative Beck, did you finish your line of questioning?
I'm done.
Any further questions? Thank you for the information, and if you'll submit those documents, we'll make sure that they get into the public record.
Okay, I have one more thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Talk to Vicki Ellett yesterday, and Bobby talked about the taxes, and it was on the valuation of the open space. And we have all been reevaluated because it was put into open space. And when they went to close, they had to pay deferred taxes. They were told they weren't revalued, they were deferred, and they had to pay $20,000 in deferred taxes.
So that would be the agricultural deferral that lasted?
It was something to do with the open space. She said it was not the agriculture, unless I misunderstood her. So that's something that we all need to know, these taxes that all of a sudden went down because supposedly our land was revalued because of the open space, if that is just a deferral, and I will be looking into that, as I'm sure several people will.
And was it your testimony that you thought that the tax, the payments in lieu of taxes on the Ellett property were not being made?
That wasn't my testimony.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. Again, we'll submit those documents. Ms. Webb will make sure they get distributed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you do?
Okay. I'd like to call Chuck Rollins, please.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Rollins.
Good afternoon. My name is Chuck Rollins. I live at 41020 Northeast 2nd Street in Corbett, Oregon, which is in Multnomah County, and I am a resident in the Gorge. I'm here today to talk about an aspect that I've been involved with representing the Crown Point Country Historical Society, is historic preservation in the Gorge. Over the last 12 years, I've been involved in every aspect that was written in the Gorge Act, and as far as preserving and interpreting historical sites in the Columbia River Gorge. I have testified in front of the Gorge Commission, and I will get a copy of the letter with some suggestions and recommendations on how we can resolve some of the issues. I'm only going to represent one point here today in East Multnomah County because that's where I'm from. And it has to do with the demolition of some buildings at Bonneville. This is by far not the only example, but this is the only one I'll use today. Bonneville is recognized as a National Historic Site, and the Forest Service came in and did a study saying that certain buildings weren't historic, so they demolished the buildings. Well, unfortunately, I didn't find out about it till the day of the demolition. Some of the buildings were the buildings that were built for the workers that built the dam, the only buildings left. No documentation whatsoever, so it's lost. The old Bonneville Railroad Depot was there. It had been altered, but a lot of the historical characteristics were lost. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that we need to preserve every building in the Gorge, but the concern is preservation with documentation. At the site of Bridal Veil, it took 9 years, but we got the documentation. It tells the story of what life was like there. Here, these are lost in Bonneville. So I went to State Historic Preservation Office, who's in charge of determining, working with the Forest Service, what's historic and what's not. SHPO told me that they have no records because once they make their determinations, they can't save these records So there is nothing on record as to the historic value of these buildings. I went to the Forest Service, who has really good people. The problem is they're understaffed. They can only do so much. When the Gorge Act was enacted and written up, it stated that only 10% of the historical sites in the Columbia River Gorge have been documented. So a lot of work needed to be done. So our suggestion from coming from our historical societies is ways that we can work with the Gorge Commission, work with the federal and state governments in resolving some of the loopholes. One issue would be get the local historical societies involved and let them have some say as to what goes on about these historical sites. What we did, we contacted Multnomah County, and we are now on their mailing list. So any building that is going to be demolished or any building that's going to be altered, we know about it. So we can get involved and put in a, let people know the historical value. We're not saying preservation here. We're just saying to for documentation. The other thing we've done as a historical group is made our own list of historical buildings and sites in our community. And I think if every community would do that, that would make it easier for the Forest Service, and we could be working together to form partnerships to help resolve some of these issues. I'm not here to make the point that every building has to be preserved standing, but if we do the documentations, when people come to us, we can say, yes, this is what this site was like. This is what this building was like. And the Gorge Act was set up to preserve the gorge, and the history is still a very important part of the gorge, and that's why a lot of people come here. So these are my concerns, and like I say, I have a letter to the Gorge Commission, which I will get to this commission, addressing these issues that I'm talking about today. Thank you for your time.
Questions for Mr. Rollins? Mr. Rollins, I think the committee would very much appreciate having some documentation on the buildings. Okay. And a brief history of the buildings. It's been alleged that the commission isn't doing enough or has not the capacity to do enough to protect the cultural artifacts and historical artifacts in the Gorge area. Yes. But to hear that the federal agencies are removing or destroying potential historic buildings seems a bit incongruous with their mission. If the mission is to preserve and protect the scenic and cultural attributes of the Gorge, you would think that would include historic structures, even if they would be located in areas that have been designated for recreation.
Yes. The problem with the Forest Service is they don't have money. If they had the money, they could have more personnel. I know the people personally. They're experts in their field. They know what they're doing, but they can only do so much. And so many things are on the fast track in the Gorge that some things get left behind. And so one of the solutions would be is working with local agencies where we could help. If this would have been brought to our attention, we could have brought up these points that, hey, these are the last two of the workers' buildings left here. Maybe we should have floor plans, photographs, drawings, something that we can share with future generations. So that's part of the solution would be to force more money if there isn't money. But working together with organizations that do that same work in the area would help everybody. And I would like to add that this is a burden on the landowner. So if you have $12 million set aside for maybe purchasing open space, maybe you could put a little money aside for helping the landowners with documentation and the research that would help resolve some of these historical issues.
Mr. Rollins, do you know of any requirement for the Gorge Commission or the Forest Service to coordinate with state or local historical societies on these issues?
Well, they work through the state, not with the local historical societies. And the problem is with the state, they're all under the same gun. They don't have the money. They don't have the manpower. And they're also under political pressures. When the town of Bridalveil was evaluated as a historical site, SHPO stated that the site wasn't significant. Yet, identical buildings with identical floor plans were submitted to SHPO. They said it was one of these buildings needed to be preserved. So the state has given two different criteria of what's important and what isn't. And there's the concern, is if it's important in Toledo, Oregon, it should be just as important in probably the most beautiful part of the state of Oregon. So you have the state, you have the Forest Service, you have the local agencies. And the frustration for me as a historian is that we're not all on the same page. And we can work together and we can resolve these issues. This is something that can be fixed.
And Mr. Rollins, do you think it's incongruous that there's no money for preservation, but there's apparently money for demolition?
It's, as a historian, I find it hard to, what's more important here, the demolition or the preservation? I say preservation, then demolish. But at least you have to preserve it, because we owe it to the future generations. It's like a tree, you cut it down, it's not going to come back for 100 years. You tear down historic buildings, they're gone.
Mr. Rollins, what's the name of the organization again that you represent?
I'm the Crown Point Country Historical Society Vice President.
And where are they located?
In Corbett, Oregon.
So it's the Crown Point
Country
Historical Society?
Yes.
And they are located in Corbett. Thank you very much for your testimony. That's an aspect that we have not heard before, and I'm sure that Oregonians are uniquely concerned with the preservation and protection of their historical assets in the state. So I guess it's clearly an area that needs additional emphasis.
And we would like to work with everybody so we can resolve this. We're not asking the government to take care of it. We'll work with everybody and come to some understandings and some preservations, whether it be save it or just document it. But we owe it to the next generation to help preserve these things.
If you'll indulge us, Mr. Rollins, Representative Lowe has a question. He's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. Mr. Rollins, could you please tell me whether the Crown Point Country Historical Society has also worked with any Native American tribes to help preserve Native American historical sites? And
No, we haven't. We've basically worked in sites that's been involved in our area. There are some Indian sites, Native American sites, but we don't make public record of it because when it gets out there, things tend to happen to those sites. But to answer your question, we haven't, but we would if the opportunity arose or they asked for our help.
Appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Lowe. Thank you, Mr. Rollins. Appreciate your testimony very much.
Thank you for your time.
Do you care to submit any documentation?
I will submit it within a week.
Okay.
I just didn't bring it today.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Casey Hoiker.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli, and other members of the committee. My name is Casey Hoiker, and I live in East Multnomah County in the Dotson-Warrenville area. And I'm here to... testify on my experience with the Gorge Commission and the management plan and what I've gone through. And it basically started back in January of 2001. And I'm sorry.
It's okay, Casey. Just take your time.
We were gone for the holiday, and it was cut short because
fire.
Because we were informed that our house burned down.
She testified.
I'm sorry. Anyways, we got there and it was right. There was nothing left. Even the family car was gone, which was parked outside the house. And it's still hard to talk about it. And anyways, after seeing everything, obviously we had to get things together and go to our next step, which was to go to the county and get a building permit. And when we went to the county, we had already figured, you know, we're having a growing family, so we would build a larger home than what we had. And the county told us that the house that we had drawn up was too large, and the only way we could get into our home fastest was to build an in-kind structure. And that put us under the existing use clause in the management plan and under the existing use ordinance in the county. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read the existing use clause in the management plan. Or are you familiar with it?
If it's brief.
It's pretty brief. It basically states that any use or structure destroyed by fire shall be treated as an existing use if an application for replacement in kind and in the same location is filed within 1 year. Such uses or structures shall be subject to compliance with guidelines for protection of scenic resources involving color, reflectivity, and landscaping. Replacement of existing uses or structure by the use or structure different in purpose, size, or scope shall be subject to policies and guidelines in the management plan to minimize adverse effects on the scenic, cultural, natural, and recreational resources. So we went back to the drawing board and managed to get a smaller two-bedroom house drawn up. It was deemed in kind by Multnomah County, the hearings officer, the Gorge Commission, and the Friends of the Gorge. The Gorge Commission and the Friends of the Gorge say even in-kind replacement structures need to be visually subordinate. And from what I understand, the county's ordinances are approved. The county ordinances are approved by the Gorge Commission, and then they aren't taken into effect unless it is approved. And if it's not, it has to go back to the county, and they have to change it to make sure it is consistent with the management plan. And nowhere in the management plan or in the county's ordinances or even in the Gorge Act can I find that it states that an in-kind replacement structure must be visually subordinate to the maximum extent practical. And that's what I'm being told. We have spent over $20,000 in lawyer fees because of hearing after hearing that we've been finding. And I recall at one of the hearings that we had, a Gorge Commissioner stated over and over again how it was not the intent of the Gorge Act to take away from a landowner in the case of a disaster. And that the landowner should basically keep what they had prior to that disaster. It has been 22 months since the fire, and I'm still not in my home. We're still battling issues on the trees, the in-kind in court. We had got a estimate of what it was going to cost us on trees that the Friends and the Gorge Commission want us to plant, and they want us to spend over $30,000 in to plant the size of trees they want us to plant, to screen